Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. In this daily editorial, we are chatting with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex. Now, Mark, I want to take a step back and look broadly at a couple of the key markets and sectors that usually give us a good idea of the general positioning and mentality of investors, whether being risk on or risk off, or taking a more simply defensive strategy. We look to currencies first. We have the US dollar rallying. Compare that to what's going on in the bond market where interest rates are falling. So that means the US dollar and bonds both have money coming in, which is usually very defensive. That means that investors are building up cash positions, moving into safer assets. But you then look at the US equity markets and we have those things running higher as well. Besides the one-day weakness that we saw on Monday, U.S. markets are moving back to all-time highs, and that shows more of a risk-on trade. So where's the balance here, Mark? Are investors defensive? Are they aggressive right now? We seem to have a lot of different sectors moving higher and not the same sectors that you would think move higher together.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. The market's almost like kind of giving us two opposing signals here, I think. And so that could be just general confusion. It could be that we're at a transition point in the market. And I think the market is in some ways summer, not sure of how the Delta virus evolves. At the same time, we're getting some mixed economic data as well, some underlying strength. And we're going to see more of this next week. The U.S. and Europe report their first estimate for Q2 GDP. So we've got strength in the rearview mirror. There's some sense that maybe we're close to a peak. And what we're seeing with this Delta variant is that today, ahead of the weekend, the Australian PMI fell below the 50 boom bust level. The UK PMI was softer than expected. US PMI and the French PMI also softer than expected. And so I think that this is one thing that the market's watching carefully, is that the growth momentum may have stalled here.
Well, Mark, one of the questions I have is, do you think that it's possible that after such a big run in the general markets, and there's no doubt they've had a great year, that maybe some of the institutional funds and even some larger retail investors are just parking money in the dollar and bonds short term before they redeploy it in something else? And that may be what's strengthening the bonds and lowering the rates and why the dollar is spiking. What do you think about that idea that they're just temporarily storing it there before their next trade?
Yeah, no, I think that's what happens. And in some ways, it's sort of like that's what life is, right? Life is what happens while you're waiting for that ship to come in. And so by that, I mean is that as the money flows into the dollar and U.S. treasuries, I'm not sure it's a safe haven, but like you say, it's like sort of a way station during times of uncertainty and maybe it's the Delta variant. And then it gets redeployed into more risk assets. And that's why I'm watching carefully in the currency market. Those risk assets typically are the dollar block and the Scandies. And this week, it's only been the Canadian dollar to show any resilience against the U.S. dollar. The other major currencies are all lower. So it seems to me that you're right, that what we need to see happen is some kind of clarification. And I'm afraid we may not see that until we get closer to the Jackson Hole Symposium at the end of August.
So, Mark, one comment you also made at the tail end of your first answer was that growth is slowing. And some of that data on inflation around the world also came in a little bit under estimate. One thing you and I were chatting about off mic is that also in terms of the inflation data, we saw prices paid and prices received. Those also fell a little bit. Is this driving home the fact that right now the argument that not only inflation, but also growth might be transitory here?
Yeah, I think that's what's going to be clear when the next week's press conference by Federal Reserve Chair Powell. I think it's going to be clear that he's going to argue that the decline in interest rates, and you know, this week the U.S. auctioned a 10-year inflation-protected security at a record low yield of 1%, a little bit lower than -1%. For that inflation-protected security. And so Powell's going to say that this reaffirms that the market agrees with the Fed's assessment that price increases are transitory. And we already know that we've got fiscal cliffs approaching. We have the sort of this pent-up demand that was built up in 2020. By the end of the year, that's going to be exhausted too, most likely. And you've got this doubling of the price of oil in the past year, all things pointing to a slowing of growth. And that's why I thought that today's PMI was important. Manufacturing stayed firm, but the service sector, which, as you know, is more than two-thirds of the economy, softened. That is to say, the pace of growth slowed.
Mark, since you're kind of our resident currency expert, when you brought up some of the other currencies earlier in your discussion here, I was wondering how much of the dollar strength could be attributed just to other economies not opening as fast as the U.S. and just their currencies not doing as well, which has buoyed the dollar. Do you think that plays into it at all?
Well, I think that's part of the what you were saying, I think, before about the flight into the U.S. It does seem that people were much more optimistic on Australia earlier this year. The fact that it had a lockdown Sydney slows things down. In fact, what looks like is going to happen, you know, the RBA was one of the central banks that pulled back. They announced plans to taper their bond purchases. And it's possible that when they meet again in early August, that they think that the economy has weakened to the point where they need to provide some more stimulus. And they might step up their bond buying. In some ways, those countries that seem to be the hardest hit, the currencies, like Norway, the Canadian dollar, the Aussie dollar, these were currencies that were seen to be ahead of the Fed in the curve of being able to adjust monetary policy. And it looks like that is the view that's being unwound.
Is that just because of the uptick in the Delta variant then? Is this the whole other consideration, which in all fairness, we've been talking about a lot, but now we need to not just assess what central banks are doing, but again, relook at COVID numbers?
Well, I think that's really the case that we've seen already in Australia. But we're likely to see that, you know, not all countries get the preliminary PMI readings. When East Asia reports their PMIs in early August, I think that's what we're going to see is some more softness in those economies in which the low levels of vaccinations, high levels of the Delta virus. And I think that's where you see some economic impact just at the same time that the economy seemed to be past their cyclical peak, looking at like countries like China or Taiwan or South Korea. And so just at the same time that the business cycle was peaking, that's when this Delta variant's hitting. And so I think, yeah, we could be seeing some weak economic data for a little while now until we can get this thing back under control.
So is the Fed right to remain in this easy monetary policy? Because in all fairness, a lot of people have been, in a way, ripping into the Fed, saying, look, you missed your chance. You should already be tightening. Look at all these other countries that are tightening. But you look around the environment in the U.S. and markets are still doing well. The economy, the numbers are still fairly strong. Does the Fed just continue to have the all clear here then to simply talk about maybe tightening but not actually do it?
Well, I think that the Fed's really, the first point is about the tapering. And this is what concerns me, is that the Federal Reserve is going to look at the break-even. That's the difference between those inflation-protected securities and conventional bonds. And they're going to cite this as a factor showing them that inflation expectations are low. But to me, this is a bit like the butcher with his thumb on the scale. The Federal Reserve is buying some of those inflation-protected securities. It's not a clear price discovery process. So for people like me, I'd say we're more concerned, not so much that the Fed's balance sheet's expanding or that it's easing policy, but it's buying the wrong things. It should not be buying inflation-protected securities. It should not be buying mortgage-backed securities right now in the housing market. We've got record price increases in the housing sector. Buying mortgage-backed securities would seem to lower the price of lower the yields, which sort of further supports a hot housing market. But I do think that the Federal Reserve will get high marks for just trying to be patient. And we're really just talking about tapering. And I still think that the key dates to be watching is the August Jackson Hole Symposium. There could be a hint of tapering. And then in September, where I expect some kind of announcement about getting close to tapering or planning to taper shortly, which would indicate slowing down the bond purchases either late this year or early next year.
Well, Mark, just this is more of a hypothetical question because it doesn't seem like, and it deals with the market correcting, and it doesn't seem like the markets ever correct for very long before the dip is bought. And we've heard some stories from some generalist fund managers that there's still a lot of money on the sidelines in the event that there is a dip in the market. But historically, what the Fed would do if there was a market tantrum, they were able to cut rates to help stave off some of the market blues. In this case, if we do ever see a more serious correction, I'm talking 10, 15, maybe 20% correction, what tools do they really have since they haven't raised the rates enough to be able to cut them back down again? What tools would the Fed have or central bankers anywhere have if there was a contagion effect that took a lot of the markets down?
Yeah, that's a good point. So there's two elements of monetary policy, at least here, right? One is about the price of money, interest rates, but the other is about liquidity. And so I think that there's a lot of non-interest rate things that the Federal Reserve can do to make sure that there's plenty of liquidity in the banking system that would be needed in such a shift in wealth, a collapse in the stock market. I think the Fed is committed to making sure that the system still works. And that means making sure that trades can clear. But there are other tools, too. Remember, the Federal Reserve sets the margin for equity purchases. They hardly ever change that. But a situation I can imagine where the Federal Reserve would lower it a little bit to help support the stock market if needed. But I don't think that's really what the Fed is aim is. I don't think they really care so much how much the stock market goes up. I think that they're more concerned about volatility and to make sure that the financial system is strong enough. Of course, when we think about financial conditions, equity prices are part of the bigger, are part of the way we think about financial conditions. But that's often offset with a downward shock in the stock market, neutralized a bit by falling interest rates. And so it's hard to say what the Fed would do, but generally I think the market, as a lot of individual investors, I think we tend to exaggerate how important the stock market is to the Federal Reserve.
In all fairness, Mark, the Fed does seem to watch the stock market closely. And I understand your argument that the Fed is more concerned about volatility rather than maybe direction of the market. But anytime the market drops quickly, that does immediately force the Fed's hands. What is your outlook for the market then? Because in all fairness, the start of this week had a lot of the bears coming out and saying, look, here's the start of a big drop. Watch out below. None of this makes sense at the where these markets are valued. But then the following day, Tuesday, markets came back and they got boring again throughout the rest of this week, boring again to the upside. What is your takeaway from market health after a little bit of weakness? But again, just a simple drop to the 50-day moving average and then a buy for the markets again this week.
Yeah, I think, you know, what helped trigger the recovery, I thought, was stories. And in this case, these stories were earnings reports. And so I think that people are still, this week, the 10-year yield in the U.S. fell to about 1.12% or something like that. How can people who are trying to save money, building up their 401ks, how can they take that yield like seriously? And so I think it still forces people in the stock market, but I'm going to be watching the Brett figures. And I think that what we should be anticipating is the stock market gains become narrower and narrower. And that's what I'm watching for. But I think that the rule, I think what you're suggesting is if for people who are trying to trade the market as opposed to invest in it, that take advantage of those days when you're down, when the stock market is down a couple percentage points to buy. But I think that strategy only works if you're willing to sell it on into the rally so you can reload the gun.
So it really is still this optimistic outlook for the markets then. Hey, even back to Shad's initial question there, and there's money on the sidelines. This money that has flown into bonds, how much lower can rates go? How much more money can go into bonds before it rotates back into the markets?
Yeah, I think something like that. I think when you tell me that we're going to be stuck with these low yields, I mean, the U.S., we've dropped 60 basis points in our 10-year bond in about 2 months. So you can get some capital gains there on the rally, but you still have to be able to lock in those capital gains. I'm concerned that where we're really going to go in yields, it's not so much on the downside, like how much farther can we go, say, below 1%, But we did see, that's why I mentioned that inflation-linked security, a 10-year that was sold for minus 1.01%, a record low yield. And so what's happening is real yields are low, and that just drags down the nominal yield.
Why is this not helping some of the other assets like gold that usually benefit greatly from declining and negative real yields?
Yeah, huh? Gold is really a puzzler, huh? I mean, the idea of low yield should have, I thought, helped lift it. On the other hand, you do have a strong dollar. But also the idea that some other things like crypto could be an alternative for gold hasn't worked out so much for gold, even though it's weighed on crypto. I'm not sure. I mean, I sort of thought that it looked so good this week when it was approaching that 1825 level. But I'm concerned that the reasons for owning gold are fading, despite, you know, if it's going to be inflation, we say inflation's near a peak. I think that we could finish the year near 1750 in gold.
Okay, so some lower targets there. Mark, let's wrap it up with what you're looking for next week. Any main catalysts that you think could drive these markets next week?
Next week, I'd be looking at maybe four things quickly. Obviously, the FOMC meeting, there, Powell's press conference afterwards. How close are they coming to announcing tapering? Secondly, we get the GDP number late in the week, looking for something with over 8% handle, annualized pace. Eurozone reports the first look at CPI for July, and it looks like it's going to be above 2%. They'll also report Q2 GDP, and there we're looking at about 1.5% quarter-over-quarter basis, which is a strong quarter for them after contracting the past two.
So a lot to look for next week then. A lot of potential drivers, a lot again on the Fed. But some of this data is going to be important to watch too, to see if we are seeing a pullback in a little bit of inflation, even in some of the growth numbers for the economy. Mark, great chatting with you, buddy. I will post a link to your blog. That is Mark2Market. And that's where you post on a daily basis, recapping data and market moves that catch your eye. Mark, thanks as always for your time, buddy. I hope you have a great weekend.
Thanks. Good luck, guys.